You're listening to The Camel Cast. We're your hosts, Jackie Smith
and Lisa Vogley.
Hey, Camel fans, it is your co-host, Lisa Vogley, and I am here with my trusty sidekick, Jackie.
How's it going, Lise?
Hey, Jax, it is June. We are grinding. Every week we get more followers, more friends. How you feel about it?
I'm excited. I think this is awesome. It's been, I didn't realize we were going to be going this long. Like, we're doing all right.
I love it. Well, today, people, I am outnumbered. Our guest is our hallway homeboy, Connecticut College men's basketball coach, Tim Sweeney. Tim, welcome to the circus.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. I'm really excited to be here.
Thanks for joining. This is our podcast about all things Connecticut College, but we want to highlight you. We want to highlight men's basketball, what's going on, checking in with you, especially during this crazy time of a pandemic and all that's going on. So let's get things started by, can you give our listeners your background, where you're from, how long you've been at Conn, and kind of your journey into coaching?
Sure, Lisa. I'll start with the present moment. I'm just getting done doing some great burpees, push-ups, and calisthenics with my three-year-old son, Henry. So we got a nice little sweat going here after lunch. And I'm going into year two here at Connecticut College. Just wrapped up, as we were talking off air, about year one as the men's basketball coach here. So real quickly, quick bio. I was born in North Jersey, about 2 hours from campus here, and played high school basketball in New Jersey, played Division III at the University of Rochester, which is a school in upstate New York. Started my coaching career there. Was very fortunate to kind of work some camps over the summer and get on at Davidson College, which is down in the Charlotte area of North Carolina. As fate would have it, I got a chance to be on staff there when Steph Curry was coming in. So I like to take a lot of credit for that. All jokes aside, it was a great experience and feel like I got my basketball PhD from Bob McKillop, who is a certain Hall of Fame coach nationally and internationally. And from Davidson, got to go to Bucknell and then Elon at the Division I level as an assistant. And then spent a good five-year run at Hobart College in upstate New York, coaching their men's team there, where we had a lot of success. That was my first head coaching job. And now here we are in Connecticut at Connecticut College, and couldn't be more excited. We had a tough year this year, ended up with not the record we were looking for, but a lot to build on. We have a great group of young men coming back, excited about recruiting, our first full recruiting class, and just really thrilled with what we can build here and my colleagues like you guys and our great athletic staff. So hopefully that made sense. And here we are today.
Yeah. Well, I have, first of all, Davidson, maybe you'll know this, and sorry, Jackie, I'm always taking over, but Davidson, when my brother was looking at colleges, I was interested in partly because they did your laundry for you. Now I was raised that I learned how to do my laundry, and I went to college knowing how to do laundry, but Davidson was like one of the only colleges that you could like drop your laundry off, they would do it, fold it, and give it back, which was like really impressive to like teenage kids back then. Were you there when they did that? Do you have any idea?
Funny you bring that up. I'm not 100% sure. I think it was initiated before I got there, but that was one of the major things that personally I was taken aback at when I got there to start working. I couldn't believe it. And it was certainly something that in recruiting and amongst the players, especially, one of the highly touted perks of attending Davidson. Now the school itself is an incredibly difficult academic school.
So there's some trade-offs,
but, the free laundry was incredible.
Yeah. Sure. I heard that they don't offer that anymore, but that was like, oh, okay. And then the basketball coach that you worked for actually used to be the head basketball coach at a high school on Long Island called Lehigh.
Yep.
And my grandfather was a charter member of starting that school. And my father is actually sat on the board of Lehigh and like for many years. And when he was the basketball coach, like Lehigh men's basketball with him was like huge, really exciting. And then I believe he left and took the job at Davidson. So anytime, my dad was like a big basketball fan because I also played basketball, but anytime Davidson on, yeah, that little like Lehigh connection. So you, right? Am I?
Yeah, coach was born in Queens, New York. Coached at Holy Trinity first and then took over at Lehigh, was the headmaster there. Brought over a bunch of Italian and European players. They won a ton of games. And it's really remarkable. When coach was hired in the late 80s at Davidson, he made the jump right from high school to Division I head coach. And you don't see that too much anymore, if at all. I know there was actually Samford's men's coach this year was a high school coach, which is an incredible story too. But basically, coach was a pioneer in that regard.
Yeah, but he also put this little Lutheran private high school like on the map. So it like ended up being a dual kind of partnership in terms of like, he really put the school on the map. And then of course, when Steph Curry came along, everybody was like, when he ran his basketball camp at Lehigh, it was like packed to the brim. But okay. So those are my two little things. Jax, why don't you lead into it for your next question?
Sure. Well, I have many questions, but I do want to touch on, your cute three-year-old doing calisthenics. Can we talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah.
Is he into hoop right now? Is he too young to get into hoop?
You know, as parents, my wife Lisa and I, you know, we've made a pact that we're not going to push Henry into anything, really. We don't want to be those overbearing parents, but he's got energy for days. And we do have an actual hoop in our living room with hardwoods, and we have a hoop outside, and we have a soccer net. And we actually have lacrosse sticks, Lisa.
There you go.
You hear that. So he's got access to everything. And so he's kind of gravitated towards basketball. He's a fixture at our home games. He sits in the second row and literally watches the whole game, which, again, my wife and I can't believe he's so attentive and well-behaved. And he actually, in one of our games, he walked across the court at the end and joined the handshake line. So he's doesn't lack for confidence. In terms of the calisthenics, again, he just kind of, you know, follows what dad does. So doing push-ups and sit-ups, he'll like to jump in. It's quite frankly so much fun to, you know, obviously we're in a very tough time right now, you know, health-wise and as a nation, but to be able to spend time with my son and have him around this much is definitely a silver lining.
Yeah. I love when he's like jumping on your back in the middle of a meeting, off the couch, doing probably flips.
He loves the departmental Zoom calls.
Yeah.
He knows when to pop his head up.
Yeah. I'm like, probably like should be paying attention. I'm like, yo, that kid's so rad. He's going to do like backflips off dad's shoulders.
Yep.
That's awesome.
So getting into your current team right now, you know, I know, relatively new, only having one season under your belt, but it seems like you know, you've gotten to know those guys pretty well. And in the current situation we're in with all the social injustice you know, movements going on, the protests that were spurred after the death of George Floyd and the most recent one, Rashard Brooks down in Atlanta, like there's a lot going on. And you know, I recently noticed that your team made a statement on social media, and I thought it was really well done. And I'm just curious, like, how did you guys come up with that statement? Have you talked to your guys? How are they doing?
Yeah. No, Jackie, it's been a tough, you know, I think for everyone a couple weeks here. And, you know, it all really started with the pause event on campus led by our Office of Diversity. You know, we had multiple players on that call. Then we got together as a group, as a team, and I thought had a really good kind of discussion on, you know, how guys were feeling, mainly just giving everybody a chance to express how they were feeling. And yeah, you know, some guys were angry, you know, some guys confused. I mean, there's just a lot of emotion, I think, that's wrapped up into all this. And then I think the most important aspect is, for me, just having individual conversations with each guy on our team, just kind of, you know, seeing how they're doing, checking in on them. We've had different guys in our group get involved with some of the protesting and so forth. So yeah, just kind of, you know, keeping tabs on that, having some, you know, open-ended discussions with that. And then as a group, Chuck Dico, one of our rising seniors, you know, led the group's effort, and the statement was comprised by the players, with the support of course, myself and our coaching staff. The players, you know, did the work on that, and you know, I think did a great job articulating, you know, our feelings as a group, and really the big thing we emphasized, and I think this is something that has been echoed on campus from John McKnight on down, is to think globally but act locally, and that's, I think, a great message, and we've taken that as a program to heart, and for me personally, you know, take stock of what's going on. Certainly, we're well aware of it, but making sure that, you know, we're taking steps right here, right now, locally and with our own group to, you know, to make a difference and to make some changes. So hopefully that statement from our guys is a good start. But as we talked about, you know, we talked about Election Day. I don't know if you guys saw this, but the National Association of Basketball Coaches, the NABC, on the men's side has already made November 3rd a non-activity day for basketball to ensure that all the student athletes are able to vote. And I think that's a big thing. And Jackie, you mentioned the most recent news with Rayshard Brooks in Atlanta. You know, I think this is an opportunity to continue to talk to our guys about how voting and being civically involved can, you know, perhaps put different people in place and help make some real effective change. So, you know, I think the big thing is, you know, having these conversations, not letting it just be a statement on social media, but continuing to talk about it. And then most importantly, figure out ways we can execute the right way and take action. And I think the last thing I'd say is we talked as a group about, you know, just like we would on a basketball court or a lacrosse field, it's all about execution. So what's one or two things we can do? Let's think locally and really get involved. So, you know, we're in the process of that, and, you know, certainly join with all of us here in our concern for what's going on, but also fully supporting, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement and making sure that, you know, everybody's on equal footing.
It's awesome. And, you know, I think what you just did, what you just touched on, speaks volumes on your philosophy as a coach too. So on top of, all of these initiatives and issues that we have going on in the country, also dealing with a pandemic, which is throwing a curveball into our recruiting. And so I'm curious, I guess, if the pandemic wasn't around, what is your typical recruiting philosophy and what is your recruiting kind of calendar and timeline look like? Because it's very different than what Lisa and I have to deal with. I think it's probably similar to mine. But certainly I think men's hoop, especially in the NESCAC, especially at Connecticut College, just a different animal. So can you touch on a little bit of what's been going on with recruiting for you, normally, and then what's kind of been going on with this pandemic?
Sure. I think, Jackie, I think where we would start is the who, like who we want to recruit and, what kind of character and people we want to bring into the program. And, I have a real simple test, and it's probably based on perspective, but we want to bring in young men who I want my son to hang around. I mentioned earlier that he's at every game. He comes to practice. He's in the office. You know, so it's a real simple metric that we start with is, you know, is this person somebody that I'd want around my own son and really want to spend time with? You know, from there, I think, you know, our philosophy and I think this is, you know, potentially a men's basketball, basketball centric concept is, you know, we don't recruit in volume so much. We try to recruit, you know, with a very specific aim on, again, finding the right fits, from that character standpoint, first and foremost. And then secondly, I think most coaches would agree, character's great, but you got to have a baseline level of talent. Like we are looking for, you know, players that can help us win the NESCAC, and you guys know how hard the league is. So, you know, it's a tough mission to find. So, you know, but it does have to start with the who and the character. You know, you asked Jackie about sort of timeline and how the whole process works. If I could outline it in a general sense, this is the time of year where we start doing a lot of our applications in the sense that we get your transcripts and find out if you're admissible to Connecticut College. But this, for basketball, and I know we're in the pandemic, this is typically the time for juniors going into their senior year where things start to really pick up. You know, one thing to share with everybody is I think in the basketball world on the men's side, and I know I felt this way as a rising senior in high school, I was waiting for my phone call from Coach Krzyzewski at Duke. So, you know, I think there's a temptation and a good one. And we actually,
I think I was too.
Exactly. We actually love to find kids that really, really want to play at the Division I level, to the point where we're okay with taking kids in regular decision. And we were chatting off air, right, guys? In our class this past year, our first class, the bulk of our class were regular decision kids that made their choice in the spring. So, you know, we're certainly working really hard right now to identify the right kids. But to give you a picture of it, we're very patient. And, you know, this is typically, 8 to 10 to 12 month process from here until next spring in terms of securing our class. I don't know if that gave you enough detail, Jackie.
Yeah,
well, I think it does, because you guys also, and Jackie, correct me if I'm wrong about women's basketball as well, but you guys, you know, you could watch seniors play their senior basketball season in this day and age. I talk about like old school recruiting for lacrosse. Like, you know, we were getting recruited, yes, around this time frame, but really kids were not making their decision until like senior year compared to where women's lacrosse, you know, 22s. Like 21s are done. They're already are like trying to identify 22s. Like some already have, and they're on to 23s. It's crazy, right? But for basketball, like you can see these kids, see if they mature on and off the court up until like their senior year. Where in some cases for us, you know, women's lacrosse, we try and close this in by summer, and we move into the next class in the fall. So I think that's a luxury. I think like it actually is beneficial, because you can actually see if they grow not only over the summer, but like, you know, those first three pivotal months.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Lisa. I'm amazed at what you guys in lacrosse can do, having to recruit so early. It's really remarkable how you guys can recruit. We're lucky that we can be deliberate and you know, our sweet spot in recruiting, and I'd love to get Jackie's take on this, I like to see someone three times. And I feel like I have a really good sense of who they are as a player. And, you know, I think you start seeing them 6, 7, 8 times, you start to overanalyze, you don't see them three times, maybe you haven't seen enough. So that's our sweet spot. And, you know, we have really three things that we really hone in on, just to give you a little bit more depth. You know, we look for kids that love to play basketball. That's number one. We really try to figure that out. And again, having a full year gives you more time to do that. The second thing is we love to find competitors. And Lisa, I think you'll like this, like cards, darts, you know, you name it. If you're competing, we want you, you know, with us. And then the third is we look for student athletes that appreciate being a part of a team. And that's, it can take on a lot of shapes. I've talked to a lot of coaching friends on this. So sometimes your best teammates are kids that are on just terrible high school teams that don't win. But you, in conversation and in watching their action, you see that they desperately want to be a part of a winner. And that was actually my experience as a high school player. You know, and then you have other kids that are on state championship teams. So those are the three areas: the love to play the game of basketball, the competing element is huge for us, and then people that appreciate being on a team and want that. Those are the three cornerstones for us.
I love that. Yeah. And so, you know, I think everyone's got probably a similar sweet spot, you know, making sure you see them enough where you feel comfortable, but not too much. But with the pandemic, you know, like a bunch of AAU stuff's been canceled or moved or postponed. And so now you can't really watch a lot of guys in person. You know, what are some things that you've kind of, how are you navigating this new landscape in that regard?
Yeah, I think it's really put the onus on, you know, the kids themselves. And I'd love to get into this. And then the high school and club AAU coaches in terms of, get if they can get us game film, right? So the three evaluations we talked about earlier, like I'll give you an example. Just this morning, talking to a young man locally, and you know, he's been able to get us highlights, and then I've actually been able to watch three of his full game tapes already. So you know, it's just great. You can find out a lot on film. It's not quite the same as being in person, but it gives us a really good idea of you know where they might stand in our recruiting. So kind of being creative with the video. You know, I've been hearing rumblings, I don't know about you guys, and in terms of lacrosse, Lisa, but there may be some activity at the high school's classic level in September into October. So there's a window there. I know Division One and Two have their dead periods right now, but they're talking about possibly at the end of the summer, getting some of these kids out there to play AAU camp. So, you know, I think there's a sliver of hope and an open window, but I would say, you know, if we're talking now to the audience of prospective student athletes, you know, just getting the films is so huge. If you have access to your own film, and Huddle is great for us. We use Huddle and among many other platforms, YouTube, but I think the film work is really important now. And then word of mouth, you know, just getting on the phones, emails, you know, tracking guys down. That's kind of the best way to get on our radar, and vice versa. We've been pretty active trying to cover ground from our side.
Nice. So did you, I have two questions and they couldn't be more opposite from each other, but one being that we're in a pandemic and Connecticut College was on spring break when everything got shifted to remote learning and us working from home. Did you get to say goodbye to any of your student athletes, or compared to, like, I was with my girls and then when we got back to campus, we helped them move out. But you guys, you know, I started thinking about this a little bit more. You guys didn't get to say goodbye to your kids, like, in person. And trying to think of silver linings and positivity during a time that can be really stressful for all of us. I'm like, you know, and the reason why I bring this up, because I was writing my end of year self-assessment. And I was like, you know what? Like, I'm really thankful that we had that 14-hour there and back bus trip each way, because, and we got to say, even though moving off campus was horrible for them, we at least got to say goodbye and have some closure, where I'm like, wait, I don't think anybody else got to say goodbye to their kids. So I'm assuming that's the same with you guys, right?
Yeah, it was tough, Lisa. We were really lucky, not lucky, but the timing of it was such that we like to give our kids sort of that, our season that ended in that sort of late February phase. And so we like to give our kids a couple of weeks just to get back into their academics, shut it down. But we had our one-on-one season ending interviews with the entire team the week before spring break. So,
well, that's good.
Yeah, so there was a bit of closure there. We weren't able to get together as a group. I felt awful for our seniors, Patrick Laser, Bailey Whitman, and Anthony Druin, and Ken Colum, who you know, was a big part of what we were doing. So all four guys, like, I didn't get to say goodbye to those guys. We did it on Zoom. The school did a wonderful job with the commencement. We had our great athletics function with the award ceremony, which I thought was neat. But, yeah, it was definitely a tough thing. I think our kind of group goodbye got resorted to Zoom, quite frankly. But luckily we were able to meet for our end of season meetings, which was good. So there was a little bit of positive there. But like everyone else, our reality became the computer pretty quickly.
Right. So my other question is, I'm really curious, and I guess, you know, the more I talk to you, Tim, the more I find, like, similarities with, like, our mindset, coaching, competitive nature, all of that, which is why I think the three of us are very similar in that aspect. But, you know, Jackie came from hardcore D1, great program, great coaching staff prior. Same thing with you. Have you brought anything from your journey from Hobart to Connecticut College? And what are some things that maybe you've changed within your, because you're still new. We're all still, you know, we're all under that 5-year mark. And so obviously coming into this league is a change in itself with just recruiting and the NESCAC rules, but has there anything that you've brought with you? It can be anything from technical, tactical, to just philosophy to whatnot, that has worked really well within your program. And then can you talk about anything that you've adapted that's new that either went well, fell flat, anything like that? Because Hobart is, academically, I would say just as strong as the NESCACs. You know, they're right there up with them. So I'm curious to hear kind of like what your transition has been like.
It's a great question. And there's a lot to it too. I think it's a deep question because we're all familiar with sort of the different levels. And I would say probably most striking is just the limited amount of time in the NESCAC you have to interface with your guys and girls. I mean, I looked at the calendar and we literally had 12 practice sessions prior to our first game. And
Wild. Like, people don't get it.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that, you know, immediately comes to my mind, Lisa and Jackie, and I don't know how you guys feel on this, is that it really puts the onus on your ability to teach and your ability to be really efficient with your teaching. I would tell you the game is the same, you know, division one, two, three. I mean, there are differences, but, you know, basketball is basketball, lacrosse is lacrosse. But I think the compressed window of time is a big deal. I'll give you a really good example. We were talking about Coach McCullough before and Davidson and sort of where I started, and you know, he's renowned for his motion offense. And what I can tell you guys is that motion offense is crafted and built, and Jackie can relate to this being at GW and Hartford. I mean, it's built through workouts and individual sessions and so forth. And that's just really hard to do, again, with this compressed window. So I think you certainly, and I've had to make adjustments in how much we try to do, you know, what we try to teach, given that amount of time. You know, even at Hobart, we started October 15th, which is 2 extra weeks, and it's a lot. It's a big difference. You know, even there, what you can do. So I've relished the challenge. I think we certainly, we attacked it a certain way. First of all, I learned a lot at Hobart, 5 years there, some great players. We have two guys right now playing overseas who graduated last year, just finished their first year, both playing overseas. So I was lucky to coach really good players and made a lot of mistakes and learned a lot from them and from the experience. So, you know, feel like really confident going forward. And I would say the same thing about this first year. I learned a ton about the NESCAC. Your first time through a league, you learn a ton about your opponents and the terrain of the league and just how to handle everything. So yeah, it's you know, your question is really, really good one. And I think the biggest thing is the compressed time window. And to me, it all comes down to your teaching ability and being able to get your group, and in our case, our guys, to be really good at two or three things that we think are most important, and then go play. And you use the season as a continuous growing process, right? For us, it's November, December, January, although maybe not this year, but we'll see. But keep going.
Yeah, and I think that has changed my scope with recruiting, in the sense that our 2 week window, we got to cram a lot in there. And if you don't have the fundamental base or foundation that's strong enough to come in and, all right, we're moving with this drill right away, day three, you're going to be left behind. You're going to be smoked. And it's with all due respect, right? And I talk to this about recruits, like, listen, especially if you do nothing in the fall through captain's practices or training, February is a rude awakening. And so I think that also ties into like recruiting with a new lens, where maybe you're like, okay, we could take the fall to maybe hone this skill or get them pumped up a little bit with fitness or things like that. But it's like, no, you got to have it. And I'm not saying it's a very, you know, A to Z there, but do you get what I'm trying to say? Like, you can't really have a kid that's lacking, and for us, like lacking a really bad left hand, and think like, oh yeah, it's just going to blossom in 2.5 weeks.
I couldn't agree more. I think part of what we were talking about earlier with, you know, loving to play your sport and then loving to compete, that's the correlation we're talking about. Like, if you don't, whether it's lacrosse and doing your stick work on your own, or it's basketball and playing 3-on-3 or 5-on-5, you don't love to do that, and you're not building yourself up prior to our season or your season, like you said, you're in big trouble. And so it's such an important aspect.
It's a new question. You bring up a really good spot, but like, it's a new question that I started asking recruits, like, why do you want to play college lacrosse? Because a lot of kids want to go through the process, and then when they have to get to college and put in the work, they're like, yeah, I don't love it anymore. And so now, you know, I've started to get away from like, why? Well, I always ask why Connecticut College, but then I'm like, why do you want to play lacrosse? Because if you're not ready to do this on your own, it's not going to be as easy as you think. So it's a great question to bring up.
Yeah. I think what you're talking about right now is probably the most difficult aspect to really figure out in this process. And I think I told you guys I had a chance. I played Division III. You guys are better athletes than me, but I had a great, I just had a great experience. But, you know, as I reflect back on it, it was incredibly difficult. And I think as I get older, you look back, that's sort of the beauty of it, is that it was so hard and that it prepares you for all these different things you're going to experience in your life. But I think that's something that people fail to realize, because, you know, there's a perception or maybe even a stigma about Division III that it's like, okay, well, I couldn't make it to these other two levels, let me go do this. And, you know, you guys all know it couldn't be further from the truth. There's folks at this level that go on, as we talked about, to play professional careers, you name it. So it's really a lot harder than I think people realize. And so to Lisa, your point, I think it's incredibly important to figure out as an athlete, you know, and this is kind of a message to the recruits out there, whether you really love this or not, because it's the commitment level is required is incredibly high if you want to be good.
Yeah.
Well, I could stay on this and talk about the motion offense and talk X's and O's for another 5 hours. However, I feel like my co-host here would fall asleep possibly. So
no, because I actually want to know if you both believe in the pick and roll still. Because
I got people
some coaches
that are good
don't.
On the ball screen, of course I do. Whatever, you know, puts it in the hole, baby.
I think that was like the first thing I said to Tim when he got hired in the hallway. I'm like, do you believe in the pick and roll? Oh
my God. I felt like I was in Hoosiers. So,
yeah. Because sometimes you're watching teams that just like to pass around and try and drain threes. And if those threes aren't dropping, you got to try something. I don't know. You got to try something different. Like if our zone defense isn't working, we go to man or we go to a face guard. So I figured the same thing. Please tell me you guys believe in the pick and roll. Maybe because I was the picker. Well, Lisa, I would like deck girls.
I think Lisa you'll be delighted to know that we do use the pick and roll.
As
part of our offense. We're big on putting the ball in the basket. That's our
yeah.
Really, that is so we really funny. Like the score.
Yeah. Scoring's good. Scoring's
yes.
good.
More than the other team. Just kidding.
I think it's time, Lise. Go time. This is my favorite part.
This is burning questions. Now, I'm not as sharp as I was 2 weeks ago, so I'm going to try and like get these back going. Just whatever is on the top of your head, say it. If don't feel embarrassed, Jackie can edit.
This is where I do the most editing.
It is the best. All right, so are you ready?
Let's do it.
Okay. Let's go. Favorite movie?
Well, Hoosiers. I just said it.
Oh, okay. Do you have any, like, what's like, do you have a backup one besides the one you just said?
Oh, gosh. I mean, you're going to be so cliche, like Goodfellas.
I knew I liked you, Tim. I knew I liked you. Okay. Favorite place that you've traveled?
Slovenia. Ljubljana, the capital of Slovenia. Most amazing city I've ever seen.
I'm going to have to look that one up on a map, but I believe you. Here we go. So we're going to do like favorite athlete or favorite team. You can choose or do both.
Favorite athlete, easy. He's no longer with us. Pistol Pete Maravich. I think when I was a kid, I read like 17 different biographies on him, had every highlight tape of him, and probably annoyed my elementary and high school coaches with the behind the back passes to know him.
Okay.
Favorite sports team is the New York Yankees. I mean, the greatest franchise and organization ever put together. I'm sorry, Jackie. It's just fact.
I grew up a Yankees fan. I don't disagree.
Okay.
You guys.
I stereotyped you.
Yankee fan, like Mets, baby.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lise.
So does that mean that you're also a Giants fan, Tim?
I'm one of those weirdos that's a Yankees-Bills fan. I could get into that if you want.
It's okay. We'll talk offline. But as long as you're, you know, as long as you don't diss my Jets, we're good.
Got it.
All right. So tell us what you do on your off day.
Easy. Spend as much time as I can with the little guy, Henry, my wife, Lisa. I really like to, you know, get outside in our neighborhood and walk, enjoy reading. Pretty boring stuff, but pretty straightforward.
I like it. If you were an animal, what would you be and why?
Oh, lion. Easy. I'm a Leo. So let's go.
Beach or mountains?
Beach.
Sour Patch Kids or Swedish Fish?
Swedish Fish.
If you weren't coaching, what would you be doing?
Probably in sales, some sort of sales.
Okay. We're going to do like two more. What second to last is, if you were a superhero, what would your powers be?
To be a fly on the wall, to be invisible.
I like that one. Okay, last one. When it's all said and done, where do you want to retire?
Ljubljana, Slovenia.
Okay, once again, we're going to have to look that one up, but I believe you. It's probably really nice.
Amazing city.
Nice. Awesome.
All right, Tim, thank you so much for being on our podcast. Stay safe. We'll see you next time.
Thumbs up, people.